From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Today, comic Michelle Wolf talks about her controversial performance Saturday night at the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner, where typically a comic roasts the president and the media, and the president roasts the media. But President Trump declined to go for the second year in a row. A few of Wolf's jokes got some hostile reactions, especially the jokes about Sarah Sanders.
I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts, and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye.
We'll hear what Wolf has to say about her performance, and we'll talk about the comedy she does on her own turf. She's been a writer and performer on Late Night with Seth Meyers and a correspondent on The Daily Show, and last year she had an HBO special called Nice Lady.
I'm not a nice lady.
And we remember photojournalist Abbas. First News. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. So, maybe you've heard about the White House Correspondents' Association dinner Saturday night, where my guest, comic Michelle Wolfe, was the performer. Some of the attendees found some of her jokes inappropriate, especially a couple of jokes about White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. Sanders, who was seated at the dais representing the Trump administration, was not laughing. Wolf's performance became the subject of ongoing analysis and debate on cable news and Twitter and websites. A lot of journalists are now saying the dinner should no longer include a guest comic. The White House Correspondents Association president said Wolf's performance was not in the spirit of the event's mission of offering a unifying message about the group's commitment to a free press while honoring civility, not dividing people. We're going to talk about what this whole episode has been like for Wolf. Wolf is known for doing comedy from a feminist perspective. She's been a writer and performer on Late Night with Seth Meyers and a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Last year, she had an HBO comedy special called Nice Lady. And she has a new weekly Netflix comedy series called The Break that will debut May 27th. To put this controversy in perspective, the White House Correspondents Association dinner has for many years concluded with the president doing stand-up, roasting the media and politicians, followed by a guest comic roasting the president, politicians, and the media. This year and last year, President Trump decided not to attend and instead counter-programmed with rallies, giving speeches to cheering fans. Let's hear some excerpts of Michelle Wolfe's set Saturday night, with some of the jokes that went over well in the room. We'll hear the Sarah Sanders part a little later.
Good evening. Here we are, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Like a porn star says when she's about to have sex with a Trump, let's get this over with. And just a reminder to everyone, I'm here to make jokes. I have no agenda. I'm not trying to get anything accomplished. So everyone that's here from Congress, you should feel right at home. And I know as much as some of you might want me to, it's 2018 and I'm a woman, so you cannot shut me up. Unless you have Michael Cohen wire me $130,000. It is kind of crazy that the Trump campaign was in contact with Russia when the Hillary campaign wasn't even in contact with Michigan. It's a direct flight. It's so close. Of course, Trump isn't here, if you haven't noticed. He's not here. And I know, I would drag him here myself, but it turns out the President of the United States is the one you're not allowed to grab. He said it first.
Yeah, he did. You remember? Good.
We're going to try a fun new thing, okay? I'm going to say Trump is so broke, and you guys go, how broke is he? All right? Trump is so broke. He had to borrow money from the Russians, and now he's compromised and not susceptible to blackmail and possibly responsible for the collapse of the Republic. Yay! It's a fun game. Trump's also an idea guy. He's got loads of ideas. You gotta love him for that. He wants to give teachers guns. And I support that, because then they can sell them for things they need, like supplies. Democrats are harder to make fun of because you guys don't do anything. People think you might flip the House and Senate this November, but you guys always find a way to mess it up. You're somehow gonna lose by 12 points to a guy named Jeff Pedophile Nazi Doctor. Fox News is here, so you know what that means, ladies. Cover your drinks. Seriously. People want me to make fun of Sean Hannity tonight, but I cannot do that. This dinner's for journalists. Good night. Clint still doesn't have clean water.
Michelle Wolfe, welcome to Fresh Air. I don't know what to say. What was your weekend like? But kind of like I think you managed to end the long tradition of having a comic at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
I think you broke the dinner.
Are you surprised at the level of controversy that your
routine at the dinner has created.
I wasn't expecting this level, but I'm also not, I'm not disappointed there's this level. I knew what I was doing going in. I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to cater to the room. I wanted to cater to the outside audience and not betray my brand of comedy. My friend of mine who helped me write he gave me a note before I went on, which I kept with me, which was, be true to yourself, never apologize, burn it to the ground.
When you say you didn't want to cater to the room, you didn't want to betray who you are as a comic, what would it have meant to cater to the room, and how would that have betrayed who you are as a comic?
I think a lot of it, and what I've seen in the past, is just like, they poke little fun at, they'll go like kind of table by table, being like pointing at people and making fun of them in a way that I think used to be fun, because the dinner used to have the president there. It used to be a like fun. We're all poking fun of each other. The president's going to poke fun of us. We're going to hit back. Now it seems like it's a much more serious environment, and to kind of not go after the big issues and just like have a little fun in the room seemed just not as exciting to me.
Well, the way, as you pointed out, the way the dinner has worked in the past is that a comic basically roasts the press, the president, Congress, and whoever else the comic wants to address, wants to roast, relevant to the, to the press in the room. But then the president gets to roast whoever the president wants, the media, Congress, and whoever. But with President Trump having opted out this year and last year, it's become very asymmetrical because the comic gets to roast and there's no comeback from the president. So how did you weigh that into, if at all, your writing and your performance, the asymmetricality of it without the president there?
I didn't really weigh it in. I also wasn't, normally the president goes right before the comic. And I wasn't even sure until like the day before if Sarah was going to speak or not. But I had already written everything I was going to write. So I was just going off of that.
By Sarah, you mean Sarah Sanders?
Sarah Sanders, yeah.
Yeah. Because the spirit of the White House Correspondents' Dinner has always been like a roast, or at least in the past few years, that's what the spirit has been. Had you ever participated in a roast before?
I've written roast jokes for people, but I've never done... Well, I've judged a couple roasts at comedy clubs.
Did you go in with thinking, like, this is a roast?
Oh, yeah. I went in thinking, we're roasting people. People are going to get made fun of. And the overarching thing that people kept telling me is that they were like, it's a bad room. And that it just, like, they were like, nothing ever sounds good in that room. It's a large ballroom. The audience isn't mic'd, so you can't, the laughs aren't very audible in general. But it's also... It's formal, which people don't laugh as much when they're dressed up. There's round tables and people are eating or drinking. So by the virtue of a round table, people are partially turned away from you. And it's televised. And there are all these people that may or may not be able to show genuine reactions. And so if you're constantly thinking, I need to react in a way that is... will come off well on TV.
You mean like not seem partisan?
Right, yeah. that you might not be giving a genuine reaction to what's being said.
You're saying some people might be afraid to laugh because it'll make them look partisan?
Make them look partisan or make them like look like they're laughing at someone they shouldn't be laughing at.
Right.
So when I was, when I was writing the jokes and I was working on this, like I wasn't expecting it to go over well in the room.
So during part of your routine, the camera, when you were talking about Sarah Sanders, the camera was on her part of the time. She didn't look happy at all. Did you think about the camera being on her while you were telling the jokes? Because like if you're in a stand-up club and you're doing comedy and you're making a joke about somebody in the Trump administration, the camera isn't going to be on them when you're telling the joke. They're not going to be in the room. So this is different.
Yeah, it is different. But, you know, there's plenty where you could look back, and the camera was on Obama when people were making pretty aggressive jokes about Obama, and he was laughing. And I think having the ability to laugh at yourself is important. I also think that if you, another part of the dinner that wasn't televised is they were giving out awards, and everyone was standing to congratulate the people that were getting awards, and Sarah was sitting.
So you think she was kind of like sitting in protest? Because
yes.
These are media awards, and she didn't want to stand in praise of the media?
Correct.
Was there something specifically said about CNN that she didn't stand?
Yeah, the CNN reporters got awards. I cannot remember the exact award they got, but they came up to accept them, and she sat the whole time while we all stood and shook their hands. But I would say if you know, this was about celebrating the media, she wasn't there to celebrate the media.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Michelle Wolfe, and she's a comic who has a new show starting in May on Netflix and Saturday night. She was the center of controversy after performing at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Michelle Wolfe. And if her name sounds familiar to you, but you never knew her before, if you know her now, it's because people have been talking about her for days, ever since Saturday night when she performed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where it's typical for a comic in their performance to roast the press and the president and Congress. But her remarks did not go over well in the room, and it's led to a lot of controversy. You had several jokes that were controversial about abortion, about the media. You said something about Kellyanne Conway that I expected to cause more controversy than it actually caused. But as we record early in the morning on Monday, the most controversial joke has been about Sarah Sanders. So I want to play what you said about Sarah Sanders.
We are graced with Sarah's presence tonight. I have to say I'm a little starstruck. I love you as Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale. Mike Pence, if you haven't seen it, you would love it. Every time Sarah steps up to the podium, I get excited because I'm not really sure what we're gonna get. You know, a press briefing, a bunch of lies, or divided into softball teams. It's shirts and skins, and this time don't be such a little bitch, Jim Acosta. I actually really like Sarah. I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts, and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies.
So that was Michelle Wolfe. Saturday night at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So a lot of people thought that you were attacking Sarah Sanders for her looks. I don't really like to put you in the position of having to dissect your joke, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyways. What was your intention for the joke?
I think people have a lot of preconceived notions about Sarah's looks, and I think a lot of what's happening is they're projecting they're projecting onto this joke. I made a conscious effort not to write any jokes about any woman's looks in this speech. And, you know, I think it's clear that the joke wasn't about Sarah's looks, but I don't think, you know, it's so obvious that I don't even really need to defend it. I think if you listen to the joke, you'll understand that it's about the fact that she lies. And if it's taken another way, I think you should go back and listen to it again.
So when you mention her eyeliner, are you criticizing her eyeliner? And if so, is criticizing her eyeliner different than criticizing how she looks?
I said she had a perfect smoky eye, so I was complimenting her eyeliner. Because it's fine. Her makeup's fine. It's the fact that she burns facts and she uses lies for her smoky eye.
So you also compared her to the Aunt Lydia character on A Handmaid's Tale. And for any listeners who don't watch A Handmaid's Tale, and I imagine there's a lot of people who don't watch it, would you describe the character of Aunt Lydia? And Aunt Lydia is played by Anne Dowd.
Yeah, the character of Aunt Lydia is kind of the mouthpiece for the administration in The Handmaid's Tale. She's the woman that kind of is in charge of all the handmaids and is kind of like the sergeant, so to speak. And she's the one that enforces all the rules.
And the rules have to do with women had to be trained to serve, to be handmaids, and to be fertile and carry, be pregnant as often as possible, because that is their role.
Yeah, the role of handmaids in The Handmaid's Tale is essentially like pregnancy slaves, I guess. I don't know a better word for it, where they're supposed to produce and have babies against their will, essentially. And I was commenting on how her actions for the Trump administration are similar to Aunt Lydia's in The Handmaid's Tale. She communicates from the president just like Aunt Lydia communicates the objectives of the society.
So some people think that that part was also insulting to Sarah Sanders' looks. And in some ways, if you were insulting her looks by comparing her to Anne Dowd, would you be insulting Anne Dowd as well?
Yeah, which is very unfair. Anne Dowd's gorgeous. and she's a very talented actress, which I think is more important. I think to look at that and say I was insulting Sarah's looks, you had to want me to be insulting Sarah's looks. I mean, it's like I was talking about her personality, and I think it says a lot about our society that you would immediately think I was talking about her looks rather than her personality. Because I think if it was a man, you wouldn't have jumped to those conclusions. If I was talking about a man, you would have been like, she's talking about his abilities. But because I was talking about a woman, you're like, she's talking about her looks.
So you're in the position now of being a feminist comic, getting criticized by other women, including some very powerful, incredibly smart women, for doing something sexist, for criticizing a woman for her looks. And you say, like, no, that's not what I did. Listen more carefully. But how does it feel to be a feminist being, you know, criticized by other women in addition to a lot of men who are criticizing you as well?
I mean, isn't that sort of what we do as women? Unfortunately.
I'd say that the women see themselves as standing up for another woman. They're standing up for. I think they see themselves as defending Sarah Sanders against a careless or inappropriate joke.
I mean, I think they should listen to the joke again because it's clearly not about her appearance.
I'm wondering if you think it's maybe a little bit sexist to think that Sarah Sanders as a woman needs to be protected from a couple of jokes at a roast, because I haven't heard men be protected that way at roast.
Yeah, I mean, if there was two people that I actually made fun of their looks on Saturday, it was Mitch McConnell and Chris Christie. and no one is jumping to their defense. I made fun of Mitch McConnell's neck, and I did a small jab at Chris Christie's weight. No one is jumping to their defense.
After one of your jokes about the Women's March and the P hats that women wore, and then you made a joke about female genitalia, you said, and I quote, "You should have done more research before you got me to do this." I got the impression you really meant that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, maybe I'm projecting this, but I think sometimes they look at a woman and they think, oh, she'll be nice. And if you've seen any of my comedy, you know that I'm not. I don't pull punches. I'm not afraid to talk about things. And, you know, I don't think they expected that from me. I think they still have preconceived notions of how women will present themselves. And I don't fit in that box.
Do you have any regrets about having done the dinner?
I'm honestly, I wouldn't change a single word that I said. I'm very happy with what I said. And I'm glad I stuck to my guns.
My guest is Michelle Wolf. She performed at the White House Correspondents Association dinner Saturday night. Her new Netflix series, The Break, begins May 27th. After a break, we'll listen to and talk about her comedy on The Daily Show and her HBO special, and we'll remember photojournalist Abbas, who documented expressions of religion at their most spiritual and most extreme. He died last Wednesday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from this station and from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering immunotherapy and other personalized treatment options to address patients' individual needs. More about precision cancer treatment at cancercenter.com. And from Amazon Music, where users can listen to music from a catalog of tens of millions of songs and hand-curated playlists, including today's new releases and music from yesteryear. Learn more at amazonmusic.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with comic Michelle Wolf. On Saturday night, she performed at the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner as part of a tradition in which the president does a comedy set followed by the guest comic. The sets are usually more like roasts. President Trump declined to attend the dinner this year and last. As we discussed in the first half of our show, Wolf's performance proved to be very controversial. Now we're going to talk about the comedy she does on her own turf. She was a writer and performer on Late Night with Seth Meyers. She was a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, but left the show to start her own comedy series, a weekly show called The Break, which premieres on Netflix May 27th. Michelle, I want to play a clip from your recent HBO special, Nice Lady. And this is about not wanting to be married or have a child.
I don't want to have a baby or a family. I want a career. That's what I want. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, but Michelle, you don't have to choose. You can have it all. Women can have it all. Yeah, stop saying that. You act like all is good. All does not mean good. You've never left an all-you-can-eat buffet and thought, I feel really good about myself. That crab and pudding is sitting really well together. I sure am glad I went back for spare ribs. All is not good. And even if we do try to have it all, even if a woman out there definitely wants it all, we've put up too many obstacles in your way to make it possible. It's like, oh, congratulations, you're having a baby? Great, couple things. We're gonna need you to get that car accident of a body back to work as soon as possible because this is America and we don't think you need time to recover. Also, you should breastfeed. It's what's best for the baby. But don't do it in public, you pig. Do it in the old janitor's closet underneath the bridge with the rest of the breastfeeding trolls. And don't have to take time off from work when your kids are sick. We'll think you're not dedicated. Also, why are you such a bad mom? By the way, your salary is just enough to cover the cost of childcare. And we know you're exhausted. You don't really know who you are anymore. You're trying to balance your old life and your new life. But quick, go have sex with your husband. He's about to leave. He doesn't understand what you're going through. Quick, go now! And sweetie, smile!
That's Michelle Wolf from her recent HBO comedy special, Nice Lady. So I think you're serious about not wanting to have a baby or be in a relationship. Do some people think there's something wrong with you when you say that?
I mean, yes, but I don't know. I'm just different than what people, I think, want me to be or what want a woman to be.
In part of your comedy special, you say, you know, having a baby is the coolest thing your body can do. And so to not have one, it's like me being a bird but saying, thanks, I'm going to walk. Did you ever want to, like, just physically experience childbirth?
Yeah, actually, I think that's, like, I mean, I genuinely think it's, like, extraordinary. It seems very neat. And, you know, like, I'm a science person. I love science. I was a kinesiology major in college.
That means the science of studying the science of body movement.
Yes. Yeah. And I am, you know, I wanted to go into exercise science. I'm fascinated by the human body and what it can do. And I do think there's something really cool about being pregnant and having a baby. I'm just not sure I want the rest of that, you know, the lifetime after that part of it.
So I want to play another excerpt of your recent comedy special on HBO called Nice Lady. And this is a part in which you're talking about Hillary Clinton. And you say that you voted for her, but you understand why some people don't like her.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you are on your comedy special.
Not liking Hillary, but the one thing that I think is completely unforgivable is some people would be like, well, you know what it is? I just can't listen to her. She has such a shrill voice. And it's like, well, sometimes that's just what happens to your voice. Sometimes you're a person with a shrill voice and there's nothing you can do about it because you don't get to choose your voice. Causes dogs to gather outside. No, I want it to be so shrill that if I sucked the helium out of a balloon, it wouldn't change my voice at all. That might be 100% real thing that happened to me.
Okay, so that's Michelle Wolf from her HBO comedy special, Nice Lady. Let's talk about your voice. I was unsure how you'd sound as yourself, not on stage, but just like talking to me. And I'd say your voice sounds, you know, sounds a little different when you're just talking to me. Does your voice change on stage naturally? Do you emphasize certain qualities in it when you're on stage?
Well, I also know how nice your voice is, so I'm making an effort this morning to keep it at a tone that's not offensive.
Oh, are you kidding? No. I don't even know how to take it.
No, you have such a soothing voice, and I was like, just, Michelle, just keep it down.
No, be yourself. Be you. Whatever you are, be you.
I think I'm just louder on stage, and when I get louder, it gets shriller.
My voice gets higher when I try to get louder. I let go.
Yeah, mine does. Yeah, it does. It's the same time the volume goes up, that the shrillness goes up. I don't know. I love my voice. I think it's great. I'm happy to make fun of it because I know it is a bit silly. I also, for some reason, when I'm on stage, I can sound very Midwestern, which I'm not. I'm from Central Pennsylvania, I just think it, being on stage kind of amplifies little quirks in my voice that aren't necessarily in my like day to day conversation.
So you used to be a contributor on The Daily Show. And I want to play a clip from one of your appearances on The Daily Show. And you were at the desk with Trevor Noah on this. This is from May 8th, 2017. And you're talking about an all-male Senate Republican working group to find a consensus on health care. It was all male and all white. And as this excerpt starts, we're seeing on the screen a photo of all the men in this group. So this is Michelle Wolf with Trevor Noah on The Daily Show.
Seriously, look at the senators who we're trusting with health care. That doesn't look like the panel that protects women. That looks like the panel that says, well, she drowned, guess she wasn't a witch. Throw in another one. 13 white guys and no women. 13 white guys and no women. In that group, they were able to get two Mormons. But no women. Which is weird for Mormons, because normally they want extra women. I mean, you'd think they'd at least put Mike Pence in that group so his wife would have to be there, too.
Well, to be fair, Michelle, just because this bill is being worked on by only men doesn't mean that they can't be fair to women.
Oh, sure. I mean, they could be fair to us. But this is what they've done so far.
The bill in its current form would hit women especially hard. For example, women who are pregnant, have had a previous C-section, have irregular periods, have breast cancer and endometriosis, among others, could all be slapped with the pre-existing condition label, opening up the door for insurers to potentially deem them uninsurable.
I'm sorry, you'd have to pay extra for insurance if you get irregular periods? Okay, quick glimpse into a lady's life. Every period is an irregular period. It's not like a paycheck where it arrives on the same day every month. Your period is more like an outdoor cat. You know it's gonna come back at some point, but you're never positive when, and you have no idea what it's gonna have in its mouth.
That's Michelle Wolf on The Daily Show 1 year ago. You've done a lot of humor about what men don't understand about women's bodies. How did you start using that as a topic for humor?
I just think it's so laughable, the fact that there's these things that happen to women constantly on a day-to-day basis that we just don't talk about because men think they're icky. You know, like, I mean, periods are a thing that women are dealing with all of the time, not just when they have their period. It's days throughout their cycle, weeks before. You know, we all have different symptoms. We all go through different things. Everyone gets, not everyone, but people get different varying versions of PMS and, you know, when your skin breaks out, you know, all that stuff. And we just don't talk about it. And it's something that we're constantly living with. And I think part of the reason we don't talk about it is because we want to protect men from having to hear about it. And I'm just so sick of it.
What reactions do you get from men in the audience when you talk about women's bodies?
I think pretty good. I mean, I try to do it in a way where I get men to laugh. A lot of times when I have a period joke I told in my special, when I'm telling that joke, I will normally look at men to see how they're reacting to it. And they all seem to be enjoying it.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Michelle Wolf. She performed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner Saturday night. And as you may have heard, it was very controversial. And she also has a recent HBO special called Nice Lady. Next month, in May, she has a new Netflix series, a weekly series that will begin, called The Break. So we're going to take a short break ourselves and then be right back. This is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Westin Hotels and Resorts. Westin is committed to the well-being of travelers, with offerings like heavenly beds, a Superfoods RX menu, and gear lending for when workout gear is left behind at home. Westin, let's rise. Learn more at westin.com. And from Home Instead Senior Care, offering customized in-home senior care services, from bathing and medication reminders to Alzheimer's care. More at homeinstead.com/NPR.
This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Michelle Wolfe, who's coming off of a weekend in which a lot of people were talking about her because she performed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and some of her jokes did not go over well in the room, and it's led to a lot of controversy. She also has a recent HBO special called Nice Lady. She wrote for Seth Meyers. She was a correspondent on The Daily Show, and now she has a new show starting at the end of May on Netflix. So let's talk about your life. When you were in high school and your first year of college, you were hoping to be an athlete. You did track. Describe the kind of events that you did in track as in high school and in college.
Yeah, I was in track. I did the high, long, and triple jump. And I ran the 400 and the 800 in high school as well. But my main events in college were the jumping events.
You had an injury. You hurt your ankle in your freshman year of college, which kind of ended your track career. What happened?
It was the day before my first indoor meet. My first meet ever in college. We were practicing long jump. We were doing, we were just practicing some jumping form with this box and this foam thing. And I just landed wrong on my ankle. And I immediately got up and started walking it off because as a jumper, you twist your ankle all the time. And as I was walking it off, I looked down and my ankle was already incredibly swollen, and I was like, oh, I think this is bad. And it was a third degree ankle sprain, and it was on my takeoff foot, and I was just never really able to put the same amount of pressure on it even after it healed that I had been previously. I think it was the last of several ankle sprains, and you know, when you sprain something, your tendons get looser, and they never really go back to their original strength, and this was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
Did you go through an identity crisis, like, who am I if I'm not doing track?
Yes, 100%. Like, I've always worked really hard in school, but, like, track was, like, a huge part of my life, and I absolutely loved it. I still am such a big fan. It's my favorite sport. But when I was doing track, I was a track athlete, and then that stopped, and I was like, oh, who am I? And it legitimately took me a while to figure that out. I don't really think it was until I started doing comedy that I was like, right, I'm this person.
At what point did you start doing comedy?
So in March of 2008, or it might have been late February, friends of mine came to visit, and I went to a taping of SNL. And I've always been such a big fan. And after that taping, I was like, how did these people do this? How did they get into this? And so I Googled all of them, and almost all of them started in improv. So I signed up for an improv class. And after my first improv class, I was just like, this is fun. I want to do something like this.
So, you know, your HBO comedy special is called Nice Lady. Did you ever want to just be nice? Because you talk about how, like, you're not nice. And Hillary Clinton isn't nice. And no woman who has power is, like, nice. And if they think they're nice, they're just kidding themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I do think for the longest time, you know, I did want to be nice. I thought that's how I was supposed to be. I thought I was just supposed to be nice and pleasant, and I realized that's no fun.
Here's another thing: like in comedy, you call people out, and you have no problem with that. But often in real life, like you'll hear somebody. I mean, any woman will hear somebody saying something like really sexist or offensive or racist or, you know, homophobic, whatever. And then you have to figure out, like, do I say something, or do I just kind of like let it go? And in some ways, it's like easier to call somebody out on stage, or just to call out like a kind of behavior on stage, than it can be in real life. So how do you handle it in real life?
I mean, it's something that I really consciously work on to, you know, feel confident enough to call people out as things are happening. It took me the longest time to even, you know, when you're like sitting on the either like a bus or a plane, or not a plane, more like a bus or a train, and someone puts their seat back too far or is talking like really loudly on their phone.
They put their seat back too far and it's on your knees because you're in back
yes,
of them.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. It took me the longest time to be able to say to a person like, excuse me, can you put your seat up? You know, or like, can you stop talking on the phone so loudly? And, you know, it's silly that it would take a long time to get to the comfort level to say that. But, you know, like I have been in the past very afraid of confrontation. And just even getting to that point, I was like, all right, good. Now I can tell people, hey, can you please not talk so loudly? And, you know, I think it's like, You have to make an effort for those things, though. So, like, when it comes to the actual important things, you know, say someone's being racist in front of you to someone, you have the guts to be able to say, hey, that's not right. Don't say those things.
Have you said that to people?
I've never been in a position where it's happened right in front of me. I like to think if it did happen right in front of me, I would be able to. But, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen, but if it does, hopefully I have the guts to do it.
Well, Michelle Wolf, thank you so much for coming. I know this is like a really crazy period for you. Thank you so much for taking the time to come to our show and to be willing to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Michelle Wolf's new Netflix weekly comedy series, The Break, premieres May 27th. After we take a short break, we'll listen back to an excerpt of my interview with photojournalist Abbas, who documented expressions of religion from their most spiritual to most extreme. He died last week. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. We're going to remember the photojournalist Abbas. He died last Wednesday. He was 74. Abbas was known for documenting religions, from rituals and expressions of spirituality to acts of extremism and violence committed in the name of religion. Abbas was born in Iran, and though his family moved to Algeria when he was a boy, he returned to Iran in 1979. He photographed the Iranian Revolution, documenting the protests in the streets, watching as a popular uprising against the Shah turned into an Islamic revolution led by extremist clerics. He subsequently traveled around the world photographing Muslims, Christians, Jews, and Buddhists. He'd lived in Paris since the late 60s. He was affiliated with the Magnum Photos Agency. I spoke with Abbas in 2015 and asked him about photographing the Iranian Revolution. So one of the photographs that you've taken was, I think, a photograph that was a turning point for you. It was taken at a morgue in Tehran in 1979. And it's a photo of the bodies of four generals who were executed after a secret trial that was held at the Ayatollah Khomeini's headquarters. And one of the bodies in the morgue was the former chief of the Shah's secret police, the Savak. How did you get to take this photograph, and why was it so significant to you?
Well, you know, we spent every day. We used to go to the headquarters of Khomeini. And then we heard that people had been executed during the night. So the only way to see the results of the execution was the morgue. So I rushed to the morgue, and I was not the only photographer. There were other photographers. And suddenly I see four bodies in slabs, you know. That was the turning point, because that's when I decided this revolution is not going to be mine anymore. Up to then, after the revolt became a revolution and millions of people joined the revolution, which was manipulated at the beginning by the mullahs, and it became a national revolution, not just a religious one, I joined as well. And that was my country, my people, and my revolution. But this very moment when I saw these four generals at the morgue, I decided to stay on, work as long as I can. I can work freely, but it was no longer my revolution.
I think it was shortly before that photograph that you took in the morgue that you took another photograph that you found disturbing. It's taken in the street where there's a mob of revolutionaries dragging a woman who they thought was a supporter of the Shah, dragging her through the streets. What are they doing, and how did you come upon this scene?
They were hitting her and dragging her. So, of course, as a photographer, you first react. I mean, you don't think too much. You just, they were running, and I was running backwards and taking pictures at the same time. And there's always somebody saying, oh, don't take pictures, don't take pictures. And I will always answer in Farsi, Barai Tarikh Hast. This is for history. When I said the word history, it somehow clicked in people's minds, saying, okay, you know, it's not for right away, it's for later on. The Savak will not recognize me on the photographs. I will have no problems. So they would not hit me instead of hitting the woman. But the problem was not taking the photograph. The problem was, shall I show the photograph? And show it then? Because in the evening, I used to get, you know, with friends, and we talk about the day, and I'd say, no, Abbas, you can't show this photograph now because it gives an unfavorable image of the revolution. Up to then, the violence was one-sided, came from the regime. And suddenly we have this picture of the revolution being very violent. And I said, I'm sorry, you know, this picture, I'm going to show it, and I'm going to show it now. And it might be in those days it was, it might be my revolution, but I have to show it, because I'm not only working for history, I'm working for the history of the present, on today's history, and I have a duty to my viewers. You know, as a journalist, as a historian of the present, I have a duty. So I'm going to show it, and I did. I sent it right away to my agency, and it was published all over the place. And I think in retrospect, I was right, because some of the hate and the violence we came up afterwards, after the victory of the revolution, is on the faces of the militants.
What was the first photograph you took that got attention?
Well, it's just more than one, you know. So, but maybe one of them was the I photographed apartheid in 1978 in South Africa. And there's a picture I took. There is a white officer in uniform, and there are rows and rows of black trainees, police trainees, and they were naked to the waist. And this picture became a sort of symbol, of icon of apartheid. And it's been used in covers, on books, magazines, and even somebody did a mural about it. So, and that was in 78. But that's not the first one. It's one of the first ones.
What did that photograph mean to you? And what are some of the interpretations that you heard of it?
Well, it's not so much what it meant to me, that we became, you know, a symbol of apartheid. And I remember, you know, I mean, because South Africans in those days, they didn't know who I was. I went there not as an international photographer, but as an Iranian one. And after they saw this photograph being published all over the world, you know, I think another photographer from my agency then, which was Gamma, went to get a visa on the ambassador or the consul is supposed to have made a statement that this picture did us more harm than a whole division of enemy. So it was the greatest compliment I could get.
My interview with photojournalist Abbas was recorded in 2015. He died last Wednesday. He was 74. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, our guest will be Pulitzer Prize-winning author John Meacham. He'll talk about understanding this moment in American politics and life by looking at the past, sharing examples of times when the partisan divide was bad, but people unified for the common good. Meacham's new book is called The Soul of America, The Battle for Our Better Angels. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, Mooj Zaidi, Thea Chaloner, and Seth Kelly. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Amazon Music, where users can listen to music from a catalog of tens of millions of songs and hand-curated playlists, including today's new releases and music from yesteryear. Learn more at amazonmusic.com. And from Moo, working to help businesses big and small create a unique paper version of themselves with premium business cards, postcards, and stickers. This is You by Moo. Learn more at moo.com.